The Gospel of the Lord. Sometimes it's critiqued of being Christian that sometimes points of Christian teaching require just a hair to go horribly, horribly wrong, which is usually why sometimes it can sound as if theologians, bishops, priests, or nuns and sisters, or whatever, when they're having these arguments about matters of theology, it sounds like they're making a big deal out of nothing. And sometimes they are. There are many times when the things they talk about are just plainly stupid. But then there are many other times, however, that what they say can require just a hair's breadth, like just a small little problem, poof, and it becomes horrible, horrible stuff. And one of the ways in which we have to be on our guard about it is to have this kind of realization that God's self-revelation is never under our control. That we always must be receptive to what God is doing and never start telling God what he's about to do in advance. And this was the grand corporate sin of especially Western European Christendom for the last two centuries, where they just got it into their heads that God had somehow anointed Europe and their way of life and everything about them, that they just got a little bit too big for their britches. And they forgot that when God chooses people, he chooses the lowliest. And so, of course, if you want to claim God's special favor, you must be ready to go to the very bottom of the barrel like that. They forgot it. Collapse, burn, war, all of those horrible things. And mostly because, in the end, they had turned a heresy into an official orthodoxy. And one of the great things that has happened in the 20th century, in the latter part of it especially, is that Catholic faith has gone through a renewal, a reappropriation of what they call going back to the sources, going very much back to the scriptural traditions, going back to the teachings of the church fathers, going back to an actual appreciation of even the medieval theologians and what they actually said. I mentioned yesterday that St. Anselm, this was the saint yesterday, was one of the last pastoral theologians that we had for quite a long time, a guy whose first job was to be a pastor. Second job was to be a theologian, but he let them interpenetrate. Around the time of the Middle Ages, they got separated because theology became to be a specialized discipline. And so the guys who were doing most of the theology were the guys who never actually encountered too many parishioners. And gradually the wedge grew and grew and grew, and a lot of theologians had very little human common sense. And one of the most important bits of human common sense that can get lost in Christian life is the distinction between God and creature, God and us. And in fact, characteristic of the, I was mentioning the heresies of the last two centuries, was that got blurred hugely. And it was starting to kind of assume that human, and this is my favorite hymn, let us build the city of God. Incredibly dangerous statement. It can have a certain amount of optimism to it, that's right, but if you get it wrong in its nuance, it says that we build the city of God and God can just sit in his throne and shut up. Really bad. The other line that you can catch is one of the ones that the Jewish people had a really hard time balancing. And it's in today's responsorial psalm. You are my son, this day I have begotten you. That is referring not to, in immediately when it was first written, their first thoughts of who the Messiah would be. It's referring to the people of Israel as a whole, and most especially around Mount Zion, the place where the people of Israel will worship. But if you also remember in the Gospels when Jesus calls God his Father and therefore he himself as God's Son, in John's Gospel, they begin to reject him on that account because the presupposition of that is that Jesus is claiming to be equal to God. And so at that point, they start preparing to kill him. It's really important to know that they are actually thinking rather practically about how dangerous a man who speaks like that truly is for a society like theirs. Because we have all met crazy people, and I don't mean people with a mental illness. I'm talking about the crazy assumption that we can speak about God on our own authority. It is really unhealthy. It is really damaging, and it destroys lives horribly. So, even though we have been given this great promise of being God's children, we are God's children by grace, which means that God chose to adopt us, that God chose to welcome us into his family. But it does not mean that we are God's children by right. It's a very important distinction. Any one of you who are parents, who knows exactly that very thin line between when your kids are thankful for all the things you've done for them to I am owed all of these things. It's just like this. It's really, really fine. And then, but that once that line is crossed, the kid becomes a monster. Really quite a terrible thing. And so one of the things about being a parent is, when have my kids crossed that line? One of the things as a pastor is, when has my parish crossed that line? When are we starting to step beyond God's initiative and we're starting to actually think that we are the ones that are working miracles? We are the ones that are doing this. That we are the ones who are building the city of God. And we generally just don't know. And this is why I like to give those who condemned Jesus to death a certain amount of latitude. Even though they did wrongly, I sympathize. I really do. And in fact, I have a great amount of sympathy for those who look at Christianity as the greatest deception that has ever plagued the face of the earth. They do exist, and they're usually fairly intelligent people. Because I think that they're getting at something that is actually at the very core of the gospel. It's that fear of being swindled. So when the apostles are preaching today about those who, without reason, condemn Jesus to death, you can imagine actually what's going on in their minds when they're beginning to, you know, stir up the crowds, giving them money, being able to say, crucify him, no, give us Barabbas instead. It's fear. Not just fear of losing your power, but that fear of being had by such a guy. And if you want to think of a good example, imagine the police officer that has a gut feeling that this guy killed the victim. And because of that gut feeling, twists evidence so that what he feels is justice will be achieved. And this is why things like the death penalty are really dangerous. Because a lot of the people who have been unjustly executed, we have found, were victims of an expedient justice that was less concerned for the truth and more concerned with public safety. They're afraid of what this guy might do again, so they're willing to lie, they're willing to cheat in order to put him in jail. This is why there's that classic line that Calvary, the crucifixion of Christ, is always happening again and again in history. Because the story of Christ's rejection, death, and resurrection always gets recurred throughout history. It's that basic human drama where humanity, out of fear for the other, kills the other to keep the self. And what Christ does is that he puts himself in the place of the other. Which, of course, makes today's psalm incredibly ambiguous. We should both treat the victim as if they were Christ, and yet they're not Christ. And yet Jesus says, that which you do to the least of my brothers and sisters, you do to me. If you want to talk about weird line jumping, This is it. There's no easy characterization that will allow us to kind of have this optimistic spirit about the future and about our choices, that inherent in being a Christian is this moral ambiguity. That we won't know if the person sitting next to us is a murderer or a saint. We won't know if the person proclaiming the gospel is really authentically proclaiming to us Christ or his own distorted version of the gospel. And sometimes it might actually be the same guy, different days, different moods. You know, sometimes the priest might be able to be telling you the truth of Jesus Christ, and then the next day you'd be like, whoa, what's going on with this guy? And then the next day it's back on to regular pattern. This is what life is like. And this is why we need the active presence of God. This is why we must always avoid that hubris that thinks that we can go it on our own. This is why we need to have a daily life of prayer. Because it's not just about getting what we need. It's training the heart to be receptive to what God truly desires in us. Because God sometimes will hide in a murderer. He will hide in the criminal. He will hide in the stranger. He will hide in the other. And he will still demand you treat them as you would treat him. This is not an easy process. And if we seek an easy answer, that is how we become a Caiaphas. But here's the good thing. Jesus doesn't get us into heaven because we got all the right answers. We are going to screw up a lot and regularly and monumentally. But Jesus goes to prepare a place for us. I find that to be so incredibly heartening. And you know what his answer is? If it were not so, would I have told you? Like, it's one of the most ambiguous answers you could ever... Sorry. It's one of the most ambiguous answers you could ever possibly imagine. He gives you nothing. But he does teach us to rely on his word. I am going to prepare a place for you. Do not be disheartened. I'm going to go through some pretty rough stuff. But I've gone before you. And that same principle applies to one of my favorite Eucharistic hymns. It was written by Thomas Aquinas. I think it's in the From the Heart book. And there's a third. It's in Latin in the book. But what Thomas Aquinas says, and it says beautiful in this little hymn, that seeing, touching, tasting, referring to the Eucharist, seeing, touching, tasting, all of my senses are deceived, but I still acknowledge you. That you are my true God. You can't translate it beautifully in English anyway. But what he also says is, truth himself speaks truly, or there's nothing true. I think the faith that we need holds on to the fact that when God gives us a promise of his enduring and abiding presence, we don't just feel it to be true. We live it to be true. And even when it seems as if we don't do injustice for the sake of society, that the whole thing will crumble, it's better to have civilization crumble and all of your hopes and dreams die, like poor Caiaphas was afraid of, than to run the risk of crucifying the Savior.